You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 92. Today is Thursday, March 23rd, and we are 1 week from opening day. That feels good to say. I'm Van Burnett, joined, as always, by Steve Gisuelli. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. We got a great show ahead, Steve. It is an iconic one because this is year three for the chalkboard predictions, which we'll tell any of our listeners who are not familiar the background on that. It's all about accountability, putting our name next to two targets, two fades for the entire year, planting our flag. And we also got some flag plant bold predictions, Steve. Your article just dropped. It's great. You guys got to go check that out on Pitcher List, Steve Gisuelli's bold predictions. You can Google it. It pops right up. Steve, it's a very fun show, man. We're 1 week out from opening day. We are getting the crystal ball out, making our predictions, our calls. Some of these are more on the volatility side. The other ones are, you know, really trying to give sound advice to the listeners. So I'm pumped, man. It's been a fun show every time we've done this. And it's year three, man. We're starting to get some gray hairs on the podcast here. But how's it going, dude?
Yeah, it's good. I could not believe that this is year three. I was like, wait, we did this two times already? It's the third time it's coming up? It's It's crazy. You know, I know we did plenty of shows before that, but I feel like that was like right before our first regular season. It was our first little like theme show that we did. So it was a
tradition born.
Yeah, yeah, you know? exactly.
And yeah. So I think we're all in this like still suffering from this COVID time warp, and little moments like this, you kind of snap out of it and you're like, holy smokes, man, we're 8 episodes from 100, we're in year three. I know on the chalkboards first season you thought I was the master over here, and then last season you whooped me on the chalkboard prediction, so we kind of got the rubber match going on here. Not that it's too competitive, but this, you know, we'll get into it all. I think the bold predictions is where we got to start, because that's 10 predictions from each one of us. And I guess first, give me a little background on the article, Steve. It's always exciting when you put something out there. Did you use like an AI chat bot to write the whole thing, or was this like an original article?
No, this was an original article. It was nice. This is the second year doing the bold prediction article, so I had like a template for how I wanted to do it. It was, you know, not necessarily easier to write or anything like that, but it was cool that I had a format already down and knew how to approach it and how to attack it.
And then
just kind of like did my research. It was a lot of prep, like for a show. Like if we have a list of names that we want to talk about, like, yep, Here's a list of guys that I like, and these are the reasons why I like them, and kind of went on it from there. Which was fun. It's a lot of fun writing that article.
You always got to give it the stress test, right? Where you're like, is this bold enough? Do I need to go bold?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was about to say, like, a big thing that I try to hit on in the intro, and I did it last year's, you know, defining what a bold prediction is. Like, I remember last year, like, I posted it to Reddit, and like, it's like, oh, you know, the comments are like, none of this is coming true. Like, this is ridiculous. Right. Like, well, yeah, that's the point. That's how you know it's a good bold prediction article, if it's most likely not going to come true.
Yeah. Judge is going to hit 40 homers.
Yeah. Like I saw, you know, I don't know what site it was on, not to like trash anyone, but there was like, Mike Trout will win AL MVP, bold prediction. It's like, well, you know, how many MVPs does Mike Trout have? And like, all he needs to do is stay on the field for like 20 more games than usual, and he's a lock to be a finalist, right? Like,
right. You're not
Nick
going
always
out
says, or Nick Pollock, you know, the head of Pitcher List, obviously, he sent out a message. I don't know if he did it last year or this year, or he did it last year. I don't know if he did it again this year, but he says that a good bold prediction article would be getting 2 out of 10 right, so 20%. So,
oh man, he's taxing. I used to think it was 1 out of 10. I was like,
yeah. So still, you know, it's not likely. It needs to be unlikely, but there needs to be good reason behind it. And, you know, just because a bold prediction doesn't come exactly true, like, there could be a lot to gain from it, right? Like, you know, I proudly mentioned Shane McClanahan in a bold prediction article last year. Same with Dylan Cease. Neither of the bold predictions were right, but if you bumped them up your draft board a little bit because of that, like, in spirit, it was right. Like, it's kind of balancing the line. Like, you want to be bold enough to have a prediction that might not necessarily come true unless, like, the 99th percentile outcome comes true on the guy. But also, if the 80th percentile outcome comes true, it still should be pretty good. And that's kind of how I approached it. And
yeah, there is.
I think the proper way to do bold predictions. Yeah,
that's a good segue, though, because I think there is a little bit of a difference. Because, you know, stay tuned. We're going to talk about, you know, more or less like 30 players on this show. And we like them all for the most part, minus a couple of fades in there. But bold predictions are a little bit different, Steve, in that it's kind of the boom bust element. It doesn't mean that we're not going to have any shares or that we think they're too risky or anything. But I don't know about you. Some of my bold predictions, when I thought about do I put them on the chalkboard, it's almost like you have to account for floor in a way for the chalkboard.
Yeah, where you don't.
Whereas for bold predictions, it's almost you're leaning into the guys who could really go off. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that. It's cool that we combine this for the same show. It's like, you know, you want to be able to balance something that you think is a great value and also simultaneously has a high floor or something that you want to avoid with more strictly going for an upside and a crazy outcome prediction for a bold prediction.
Yeah, well said. It's kind of the head and the heart. And we're going to start with the heart, with the ones that we just, you know, you kind of feel in your gut, and we're going to do these bold predictions. Now, the caveat for our listeners is we have 10 each. Steve's article published. Mine is almost completely written, but we've got 10 each, so we've got to do something we don't often do on Wins Above Fantasy, which is the lightning round here. You know, we pride ourselves in digging deep, but Steve, I think I'm going to set the timer, and for these, we're going to basically have the one-minute pitch and see how it goes, you know? I mean, maybe this will be successful. Maybe we'll completely fail our own test. But how do you feel about the shot clock? Are you down to just kind of jump in and start getting into them?
Yeah, I'm down to do it. Let's do it. I love it. It's a great idea. Very innovative. Maybe, you know, when we hit it big and we have, like, you know, a full soundboard with sound effects, we could implement those type of things. Or, you know, if this becomes like our full-time job or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I could drop something in, but I would really want to do like the Fox playoff baseball music and all that.
Oh, yeah. Copyright trouble
or something. Well, Steve, you will be first once you get a sip of water over there, and I'll put you on the spot. But I've got my timer ready. You know, feel free to let it rip on bold prediction number one.
All right, so bold prediction number one for me. Shohei Ohtani wins AL MVP and Cy Young, which I don't know if that happened since in the year Verlander got his MVP. I think maybe it did, but yeah, it's rare. But I think what's going to happen is that Ohtani is going to combine his 2021 hitting season, where he won MVP for that and was a really good pitcher despite of that, along with that, and then last year at what he did on the mound with the new sinker that he has, and, you know, hitting 100. You saw him strike out Mike Trout at the World Baseball Classic last night.
Good
as we
Lord.
Record this on Tuesday. I think it's all going to come together. I think he made plate improvements that weren't seen in the overall slugging line or home run total. He made more contact, struck out less. And then just as he constantly improves as a pitcher, as you see it every year, he'll do enough to win a Cy Young, despite not pitching close to 200 innings. Less and less people pitch 200 innings anyway, so 160 innings of Ohtani will be good enough to win the Cy Young, along with his MVP award.
Okay, that was 108, Steve. I was going to play you off the stage like Oscar style, but that was pretty good, man. That was like you work in radio or something. Okay, yeah. So bold prediction number one for me, Vinny Pasquantino will be a top 10 hitter in OBP leagues. Yeah, coming out bold here. He's projected 52nd on the Razzball OBP player rater. And I think he's ready to surge, folks. Last year had the 11th lowest strikeout rate in all of the majors. That right next to an identical walk rate. So walks as much as he strikes out. And he hit 295 last year. And that's when he had a slump to start the season. So I think Vinny P... the plate discipline is not a question. The question from projections is more on the power, where most systems only have him projected at like 23 homers. However, if you look in the minors, his ISO was always miles ahead of that. Last year, his ISO in the majors was 155. In the minors, prior to that, 284, 250, 274. I think Vinny P is a 30 home run hitter. I think his OBP is going to be around 390. Batting cleanup all year. He's going to have great counting stats. I think Vinny Pascottino is a top 10 OBP league player, and that's 107 as well, Steve. So I also had to get played off the stage. But we're having fun here. Let's jump back to you for your second bold prediction.
Yeah, real quick. Don't start the timer quickly. But, I think that we talked about it last episode. I think that people are sleeping on Vinny P's power. Like, all that was talked about was how this guy was homering every day in AAA and AA last year before he got called up. So, great call there. All right, speaking of power, my next bold prediction. Aaron Judge hits more homers in 2023 than he did in 2022. So he hit 62 last year. He's going to hit more in 2023. What led me to that bold prediction was just browsing his Statcast page, just looking at that expected Parks home run total, and he was expected more home runs in 20 out of the 30 ballparks. So not that, that you can prorate that in any stadium because you don't play in every single park, all your games in every single park, but it's still impressive that he has that kind of raw power. Additionally, the player page on pitcher list, he basically lives in his own atmosphere for the power grid. His rolling chart is like, there's 90th percentile, then you go up 10 levels in the elevator, then that's where Aaron Judge lived all year. So he's gonna hit more home runs in 2023.
All right, you're ahead of time there, Steve. That is a very impressive you're setting the bar for me, so I gotta come back in. But by the way, I think I wouldn't be shocked if Judge did that, so I think that's a good— It's bold for sure, but that is possible, which is crazy to say. All right, so my second
prediction. You're saying I'm not bold enough there. I guess maybe.
No. Yeah. I think it's in that nice 10-20%. I would say closer to 10 or 5% because that's historical. But it is Judge. Yeah. It is Judge. Okay, so my second bold prediction: Nico Hoerner finishes as a top three second baseman. Now, right now, he's not even eligible at the position, guys, but he will be shortly, and he's set to bat leadoff for the Cubs, which is notable because he did that very little last season, and he's got an improved lineup behind him there. I think that's really going to help his counting stats. If you're wondering, he would be the ninth second baseman off the board right now, so this would have to put him third around names like Semien, Altuve, who's out for a little bit, Jazz Chisholm, Ozzie Albies, Tommy Edman. But I love Nico Hoerner. Strikes out just 11% of the time, just like Pasquantino. Last year, he had a 281 with just a 300 BABIP, which is reasonable. His X average is all in line with that. But what I like most is that the speed should erupt this year. Batting leadoff, he stole 20 bags last year, but just 135 games. I think this guy's got a shot at 30 steals. The pop at 10, 12 homers, batting close to 290 with 30 steals. I think this guy could be a top three second baseman next year for the Cubs. Okay, I ran over there, Steve. I know that's a little bit of a bold one, but I like Hoerner, man. I got a lot of shares for being a Cardinals fan.
With everything that's happened to the second base position with Altuve going down, I'm really glad that we've kind of identified Hoerner as a target because he's come cheaper in NFBC, I think, because he doesn't have that to be tagged just yet. Mm-hmm. He doesn't in Yahoo yet either, but I mean, in Yahoo, you'll get it in like, over the weekend, five games essentially. But I think it's a great call and a great second base target, especially considering how brutal the position is now without Altuve.
Yeah, number it's 17 like, on PLV's contact leaderboard. Number 17 is Nico Hoerner. So he's got the hit tool. All right, you're up, Steve. Yeah,
take all right, away. So not a specific player, but maybe more for like a macro fantasy level analysis. Over five guys will have 40 steals, I think, for the first time since 2013, I believe it is.
Wow.
I think steals are going to be up like crazy. I think we're kind of at a point where we're deciding, oh, who is going to steal more? Is it the guys who already steal 30 bases, the guy who steals five are going to be eight? I think it's going to be a lot more just across the board. In spring training, guys have been taking off at a crazy rate. I think it's up 23%. They're having more success. Not only are the bigger bases going to play a role, but the pickoff rule, you can only throw over twice. So I think that'll help guys like Trey Turner, guys that they throw over a bunch on. And then the bigger bases will just help guys, you know, get that extra, you know, split second, which I think is a big factor for a lot of teams. They map this out and have it all planned out when you can go, when you can't go. It's such a strategy. Guys are going to go a lot more now. We're seeing in spring training it's going to carry over the regular season. I think stolen bases will be up across the board everywhere.
Now, I love it. And we could take a pause there. So, you know, you mentioned, Turner, but overall, like, do you have the five in mind, or is it blank?
I don't. I mean, you know, guys that come to mind are like Turner, Acuna, J-Rod, and then the other guys like, you know, Jorge Mateo, the guys that are just steal guys. Like, maybe if they could steal 40, 50 bases, they now, like, that player now becomes more useful, where, you know, last year, like, a Miles Straw just isn't that useful because despite him stealing, you know, he can't hit it anywhere. But if that 20 becomes 35, 40, then that player, you know, now has, like, you know, the speed demon role now becomes, you know, the Scott Podsednik role becomes more relevant, right?
Right.
If stealing is up more across the board, and you're able to be more successful because of it. So, there could be some playing time increases for the speed only guys, which I think might also be a factor.
Yeah, I dig it. All right, I'm jumping in. My next one is that Max Muncy finishes top three in home runs in the National League. Right now, projections have him finishing 15th in the NL behind a bunch of sluggers. We got the Dodgers, we got the Padres, you got the Phillies. But yeah, they've got him projected at 28. I think we're forgetting that just a year before last, Muncy had 36 bombs. And last year, he dealt with injury. He also came back and he started to click in the second half of the season. OPS was back up around 800. He had a red hot August. His hard hit rate went up. But in the offseason, he was not satisfied. He moved away from a little swing change that he had. He went to driveline, added 7 miles per hour on his bat speed. I think Muncy is ready and the Dodgers need him. I absolutely see a possibility where Muncy hits 37 bombs, hitting cleanup almost every day, maybe spelling out JD Martinez at DH, and trails only Pete Alonso and Kyle Schwarber in the NL for home runs. Right at the minute. Steve, we haven't talked about Muncy a whole lot. He's kind of that second, third base option, but what do you think? You think Muncy could have a little bounce here?
Yeah, I just took him in a draft that I'm doing as we speak, so yes. There was kind of a moment last year where, like, you were looking at any of his rolling charts, like, Max Muncy is, like, healthy again, right? Like, there was a clear
injured elbow.
Yeah, point where his elbow got better. Like, you saw all of his metrics just become a lot better and healthier, and a full healthy offseason does wonders, right? So even though he did get healthy late in the season, the fact that you have a normal offseason of not, like, recovering and trying to get healthy and just working to get better, I think players mention that a lot. I think that's huge. So, I'm all in, and I think Muncy will be a great value this year.
Okay, now, Steve, you're up next, but I got a question here. I don't know if there's a typo on the boldness on this one. I'm kind of wondering if the OF was supposed to be in here or not, because you got Newt Barr, but I feel like this one didn't strike me as bold enough, at least as it's written.
Oh, did I put top 40? Yeah, I got to edit that. I meant either top 20 outfielder or top 40 player.
40 overall. Okay, now we're talking.
Yeah,
now we're talking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll make sure I edit that. Yeah. Yeah, our guy. I mean, the man that needs no introduction on this podcast. It's Lars Nootbaar. The marriage of plate skills and power. The driveline videos of him setting personal records for swing speed. It's all there. I mean, you know, everybody loves him. He's, you know, Shohei Ohtani's BFF in the dugout in Japan. It's just awesome. And I hope that, you know, for everyone's sake, it's just, you know, if it continues into the season, it'll just be a great, great story. I think Lars Nootbaar has all the tools and is just waiting to break out. And should easily be a top 40 outfielder, as I wrote. But I think he could be a top 40 player. Chipping some steals, walk, hit for good average with solid power.
I think so. I mean, I think what needs to happen is the Cardinals can't screw around with his playing time. And I do think he, with his on-base skills, I'm hoping he actually slots up and swaps with Tommy Edman, who doesn't walk nearly as much.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a bold prediction where it's probably going to be on everyone's bold prediction. But, you know, there is some downside, I think you're saying, that we might not want to accept as, like, industry people are in love with him. The playing time might not be there.
It's a good example, yeah, though, so, of where it makes more sense as a bold prediction than a chalkboard pick.
Yes,
where
you're, absolutely.
Like, promising this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, it's a newfound tradition for me to somehow fade Gerrit Cole on my bold prediction. So my next one is that Kevin Gausman outpitches Gerrit Cole. It's kind of a two-parter because on one hand, I'm a big believer in Gausman. On the other hand, I'm kind of out on Gerrit Cole. So pretty much since Spingate in 2021, there's some really interesting spin rate charts for Cole where he's just never gotten to that same RPM. And the homer rates, the ERA, has kind of followed. But last year, I mean, definitely Cole had the strikeouts, but he was 41st in the league in home runs per nine. And that led to him being 30th in the league on ERA. So I think we're a little too quick to just completely ordain Cole as SP1-1. And, you know, when I'm looking at Gausman, on the other hand, you've got the volume with like 190 innings. You might be trading off some strikeouts. Cole's going to probably have 30, 40 more strikeouts than him. But Gausman had a 2.81 ERA last year, and that's with terrible luck. We talked about it with Nick Pollock on the PLV episode. Gausman's hit luck was 34. So where his actual whip was 1.24, if you removed his hits that should not have been hits, according to PLV, it drops his whip all the way down to 1.04. You put that in the mixer with the fact that the Blue Jays are going to help his win total. He's obviously got one of the best pitches in the league with the splitter, a 27% swinging strike rate. Last year, he just had a 3.9% walk rate. I think Gausman absolutely is an ace. And when I look at him next to Cole, I think that there's a reasonable argument for him, but there's about 50 picks between them. So maybe some people would say it's not bold enough, but I think just from ADP alone, I'm throwing it out there that Gausman outpitches Cole this year.
I like it. I like it. I think it's bold enough. I think we've talked about how Gausman was a bit unlucky. So yeah, I'm in there. I think that Gausman is an SP1. Like a lock as an SP1, and I don't think he's being treated as such in draft. So
yeah,
perfect guy to like wait on for a start for SP1 in my mind.
Yeah, same. He's a big target. So Steve, round us out with your fifth here for part one of the bold predictions.
Hunter Greene wins the NL Cy Young.
Oh, that's bold. Bold too.
It's, yeah, that one's bold enough. Not like the Nootbaar one where. Or a typo there, you know. Green, we saw what he did in the second half. It all came together. Like, it just screams, like, this is another Spencer Strider. Like, an amazing fastball, amazing slider. He figured something out in the second half and basically was unhittable. It was only 31 innings, I believe, in the second half. But nine starts. One home run is the thing that like was like, wow. Like a guy that, you know, I remember watching that start versus the Brewers where he gave up five home runs. I think he also had like eight strikeouts there to just tell you how good he was. But
yeah,
I just think that he has the stuff to do it. And is kind of discounted because of how bad that first half was and the fact that he only has two pitches. But it doesn't really matter when your two pitches are two of the best pitches in the league. So, yeah, I'm all in on Hunter Green for 2023.
Yeah, it's a good one. I think, you know, another thing we talked about, the PLV episode, if you guys didn't listen to that with Nick Pollock, Hunter Green is a PLV darling where he was like top five or something across the board in those metrics. Yeah, just the 30% K rate. If he can get the, you know, kind of get the location in check a little bit, that slider's got a 38% whiff rate. And the dude just regularly sits like 99 miles per hour. So hard to argue, Steve. I think, you know what, we've had McClanahan, we've had Strider, we've had Dylan Cease was one of your ones last year. And it does feel like Hunter Green is kind of in that perfect pocket where, like, yes, you have to pay up, but it could be the last year he's this cheap in drafts. So I like it. I think it's going to be interesting, man. I can't wait for the actual season to start for some of those questions to get answered, because we only saw it for like five or six starts where he was truly himself, if that's who he is. So my final one for part one here is that Taylor Ward finishes a top 10 outfielder. Maybe I got to scoot this one up a little bit because he's being drafted at the 29th outfielder in draft room. So I don't know if it's bold enough, but I don't have to
convince. I'll give you the seal of approval. It's bold enough.
Okay, so top 10 outfielder. Last season, we all kind of knew initially he broke out, but the end of season line, 281, 23 homers, 5 steals, 138 runs plus RBIs. And the underlying numbers backed it up. 12% barrel rate, which has climbed every year. 87th percentile in the league there. He's just got a nice balance of like plate discipline with kind of solid pop. And I think really the story of last year is that he had the hamstring injury at the beginning of June. And if you kind of split the season into thirds, the first third and the last third, he pretty much averaged out at a .310 batting average. He was pacing for 30 home runs and 100 RBIs, 100 runs. It was just that June and July that was pretty dreadful and kept his overall season just good and not amazing. So I think, you know, when you picture the fact that he's got some speed and you got the bigger bases, some of the pickoff rules, I think we could see a, you know, 300 season from Taylor Ward, 25 homers, maybe 8 to 10 steals. And now he's batting leadoff with the Angels. So I think this is an opportunity where Ward could, you know, really rack up runs and RBIs and eclipse the top 10 in outfield. So unfortunately, his ADP has been rapidly climbing, Steve. I think at the start of the offseason, we were talking about him in like the 150s, 160s. Mm-hmm, now mm-hmm. It's about 100 flat. So
yeah,
it's tough. I didn't want to go there with the chalkboard because all of a sudden you got to pay for that tax. But I do still think the bold prediction is that he could really go off with the Angels.
Yeah. I kind of like what the Angels did. I know they're like the Rockies in a sense where we kind of make fun of them. You know, they have Trout, they have Ohtani. It's like, you know, the meme going around last night was like, imagine if these two were on the same team. It's right. Like, but I do like their moves.
Renfro.
Brandon Drury, like they have actual major leaguers at those sort of positions. I think they also got Gio Urshela, who's pretty good, you know. Like,
yeah,
they
Logan
have, like,
O'Hoppe at catcher.
Yeah, yeah, nice, exactly, exactly. So on paper, I like what they did, and really, really could think that, you know, it could be a big year for Ward, because it's another narrative thing that makes sense, like with Muncy, right? Like, there's a clear, okay, this went wrong. He got healthy. He was good before that. He got healthy again. He was really good again. Like, you could talk your way out of that slump in the middle of the season relatively realistically,
you know? Yeah, and unfortunately now you kind of got to pay the price, but that's outfield tax as well. So those are the first five for each of us, guys. We got another five each. We'll keep the lightning round going, but we're going to take our first ad break. We'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, back into the furnace here. Talk about another angel that could really help them, maybe more so than the offense.
Yeah, maybe I have to do a bold prediction of, like, the Angels winning the AL West or something like that.
Okay.
Might be a little crazy, but...
Yeah, that'd be bold. Too bold.
Yeah, bonus. Yeah, yeah, bonus bold prediction that probably won't come true. Reed Detmers, sub-3 ERA and 200 Ks. This all comes from the reworking of his slider. After he came back, he was a totally different pitcher. When he had that no-hitter, like, there was, like, five walks on it, and he still, like, just clearly didn't have it, and... Nick would talk about in his roundups how he was just missing that strikeout pitch, and when he did rework his slider after being sent down after that no-hitter. So a guy that threw a no-hitter got sent down, like, you know, that how could that happen? But it did last year, right? That's crazy. But he was a totally different pitcher since he reworked that slider. He throws four other pitchers consistently. The fastball is not great, but if there's any other improvement like that slider, like he did with the slider, there's room for upside of an SP1-2 here. That's how good his stuff is. Like, his strikeout numbers in the minors were just ridiculous. I think, like, in his first year in high A, he ran like a 40% strikeout rate, just video game number. So the stuff is there. He has that great, like, little rainbow curve too. And obviously, you know, you like when you a pitcher can do something like that and improve a specific pitch, because it shows that they're willing to work on it, improve, and get better. And who knows what else could happen if he improves another pitch. So I like Reed Detmers a lot as a late target for high upside as a pitcher.
Yeah, I love this one too, Steve. I think, strangely, his no-hitter might have actually done bad things for his reputation of just getting, like, two strikeouts. So, people kind of miss the whole... You know, at least people who switched off missed the fact that he, you know, completely found that slider. And, yeah, some of the off-season reports, everything looks promising and exciting for Detmers. And, man, would that be needed for the Angels staff and just their overall push. So I love that one. It is extremely bold, which I commend. And I think one of the other things is, like, right now Detmers' ADP only is 207. Like, this is still a bargain. You don't have to pay up too much for Detmers. So really good one there. I am sticking with a pitcher as well. It is that Christian Javier will finish a top five starting pitcher. Right now he's about the 20th starting pitcher off the board. I know that we both love him, Steve, but last year, just as a reminder, the 148 innings, 194 strikeouts. But I don't want to, like, slide over the 148, because that's decent volume to where, yeah, I think he's got a better shot at higher innings than, like, a Spencer Strider. And yet Strider's going three
rounds. He wasn't a starter. He wasn't a starter for the first, like, month of the season.
That's right. Yeah. I mean,
Javier was a waiver wire ad because, like, he was a bullpen guy for, you know, the first month.
Right. And like, you can see the 240 or 254 ERA, but a 0.95 whip. And the fact that that whip came with a 9% walk rate, it makes you wonder if he could improve the command. You know, we could be looking at video game numbers for Javier. Mm-hmm. We all saw in the game logs last year, like, there were multiple outings where he had, you know, 13 strikeouts, 14 strikeouts. So I think Javier is simply elite when you look at some of the whiff rates. Obviously, the slider is elite. The fastball is also excellent. I just think with the Astros kind of leaning on him more this year, I think it's very possible he throws 180 innings and we're looking at Javier as an SP5 next year.
Yeah, I'm for it. You know, I had a ton of shares of Javier last year. He was, you know, the ace in a bunch of my leagues, so don't have to do much convincing for me there.
Yeah, and I guess I should caveat that the SP5, not an SP5. Your rotation's good if he's your SP5.
Oh, so yeah.
Got to throw absolutely. That disclaimer out there.
SP5 overall.
Overall. Okay.
Oh, and should we, not to interrupt here, but I think we're using the, at least my caveats in my article was the Razzball player rater for rankings. So.
Yes, that's a good indicator.
I used Nick's list as a scoring system last year, and that, you know, that just doesn't work because at the end of the year you're changing things for matchups, things like that, and you know, don't want to just, you know, Nick's list isn't useful. Yeah, yeah, we need the computer to spit this out for us. Exactly.
Yes. All right, Steve, you're back up for your next one.
Another one that I can't believe I have two Cardinals. I guess I'm, you know. trying to just please you with my...
it's almost like we talk every week, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But Brendan Donovan is a top 50 fantasy player. Wow. We talked about it a bunch last week. The new swing change, the added power, holding the contact skills. He was a gold glove winner last year, so there's plenty of reason for him to stay in the lineup just with that alone. The position versatility, he can play all over the field. And, you know, it just looks like he put in the work of this offseason to gain more power. Like he was like, you know, I need to do more damage. And he went to Driveline, or I think it was a different facility down in New Orleans, but similar to Driveline. Can't think of the name right now, but, you know, shout out them.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's worked so far in spring training. He's got some more power. And, you know, he doesn't need to be a 20 homer hitter, but if he's a 15 to 18 homer hitter with that contact skills, and who knows, you know, maybe he runs a little more with the bigger bases. He could be like a 5 category contributor. Like my peak comparison is like, you know, like a, you know, like a DJ LeMahieu, like mix between the Yankee power breakout and like the Coors Field, like, you know, 15 homers, 15 steals, 290.
That's a good comp.
And good counting kits, good counting stats. Yeah.
And he kind of plays everywhere. Like, I think it would be very on brand for the Cardinals to spell out a handful of guys like 4 out of 5 games, but Donovan just always is either outfield or second or third or wherever. One other note on Donovan is the report came out today that he will see some time at the leadoff spot. So that's kind of bad news for Tommy Edman, maybe even Lars Nootbaar, but it sounds like they're going to kind of mix and match on that rotation. So love Donovan there. I think we'll talk about him in a minute as well. My next one, after 2 years of fading Randy Arozarena, I had to just give in and show the man some love. He's an ex-Cardinal, ex-Peoria Chief, in fact. And this one is that he's going 20-40 this year, folks. And he's hit 20 homers the past 2 seasons, and that's with missing some time. So then you might ask, like, what's up with the speed? And Steve, you already talked about the bases and, you know, the pickoff rule, how you might see 5 guys going for 40 steals. One thing I've been looking at as kind of a sneaky metric is caught stealing, because it shows that willingness to run. And in 2021, Arozarena went 20 for 30 on the base paths. So he was caught 10 times. Last year, he stole 32 bases. He was caught 12 times. So last year, he attempted 44. You know, another thing about Arozarena, softer analysis, but this guy just loves the spotlight. Like, he's the guy who will stretch, you know, a bloop single into a triple just because he's going to go for it. He's stealing home base. I totally could see him wanting to just grab headlines this year and go Ricky Henderson mode, running like crazy. So I know you got to pay up for ADP. It's way too pricey for me to have shares, but I am going to back him and say, I think he could go 20-40 this year.
Yeah, and he's like the type of guy that, you know, has those numbers in mind, right? Like he's
keeping
going
score.
For yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Like if he's at 19-38, like he wants the other homer. He wants, you know, the 2 more steals for those numbers. Like he's conscious of that. Like I remember like Acuna when he was going for that 40-40 season, like he was like, yeah, I'm aware of it. I'm trying for it. So,
yeah.
You know, it's good for fantasy when you hear those sort of things. So I like it a lot. And, you know, been slow to come around on Arozarena as well, but I think he kind of is what he is at this point. You know, maybe there's a harder fall off for him because of the plate skills, but I don't think there's any reason why it'll be this year.
Yeah, very cool. Well, don't have time for it, but you guys should check out, too, the story if you watched him with Mexico and the World Baseball Classic. Very cool story about how he got his citizenship there and convincing the president after he had fled to Mexico and was basically a refugee, but convinced the president to make him a citizen to play, which is super cool. But
amazing. I did not see that. That's awesome.
Yeah, awesome. So, Steve, you're back up for your 8th bold prediction.
So this one's pretty bold, I think, because the guy doesn't have a closer job right now, but that's Evan Phillips leads the National League in saves. I think he is by far the most talented reliever in the Dodgers bullpen. The Dodgers have always had a reliever in you know, a fixed role for closers. I know that was Kenley Jansen for a lot of time, but they gave Craig Kimbrell, who was not good last year, a really long leash there. I think Dave Roberts likes to have a role and is kind of beating around that point. I know that there's a lot of other good guys in there. Brewstar Gratterall, Daniel Hudson is also there. He's closed before. Brewstar Gratterall hasn't closed but has really good stuff. But I think maybe Gratterall might be more of a fireman role because he's like this elite ground ball guy and might have to come in and try and get a double play, where Phillips is like your prototypical strikeout closer type of guy. He has the stuff to do it if he's given the role. Like,
yep.
If Evan Phillips was named the Dodgers closer in like January, he would be drafted in the NFBC in like the fourth round.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's how good his stuff is. Yeah.
I know it, man. I'm cheering for it. I've got shares because you convinced me, but I'm nervous just because they haven't named him. I got burned. Yes. I got burned last year thinking it was going
to
be
saves. You need to have another saves plan because he hasn't been named the closer. Yeah,
great flyer though. And in best ball, like you said, he might still be a valuable play just with how good he is, and he'll probably stumble into wins, and even if he doesn't get some saves. So, yeah, love Evan Phillips. My next one is kind of a summary. Probably don't need to even spend the full minute, but it is that Lars Nootbaar and Brendan Donovan will combine for 50 home runs. Couldn't get out of the bold predictions without hitting on a couple Cardinals, so I thought I'd kind of lump them together here. But yes, love that Nootbaar continues to add to that bat speed. Last year, the barrel rate jumped from 4 to 12%. He had a really good month in terms of pop. 14th in the majors in hard hit per swing. He's just got elite power. His exit velocity on fly balls, line drives, is ahead of names like Goldschmidt, Harper, Acuna. So he has pop. And then Brendan Donovan, it's just kind of the Cinderella story of him adding muscle. He's got the bat with the puck at the bottom. I'm not sure what this will look like. Maybe it's 26, 24 to get there. Maybe Nootbaar just goes off and it's like a 30-20 thing. It's definitely bold, and even I would be surprised, but I think, sometimes you got to roll the dice with the Cardinal Devil magic. So it's kind of a combo package there, but I know you like them too, both of those guys too, Steve. So
yeah, I can't disagree. They're both in my bold predictions. So yes, this one's definitely coming true.
Okay, floor's yours.
Here's another deep one. Ryan Noda goes 2020. I think we talked about him after we did our Dynasty recap. We took him late in the first-year player draft. Noda is a Rule 5 pick from the Dodgers, selected by the A's. And if you don't know the Rule 5 rules, you either need to have the guy on your 23-man roster or return them to the team that you selected them from in the winter. So in theory, right, if you target Rule 5 guys, they should get playing time. There's been some, Akil Baddoo, I believe, is one. Yep. There's been a few other interesting Rule 5 guys that have kind of broken out because, these guys need to play. And when they're on bad teams like the A's, like Ryan Noda should get a shot. Last year in the minors, I believe it was his age 25 season or 24, so he's an overager, but he started the minors pretty late, like at 21 or 22. But I believe he went 30-20 last year. So the power is there, the speed is there. It's a deep play, and obviously a lot needs to happen for this to be true. But that being said, I think Noda kind of does have the skills to be a 2020 guy, and could be a nice bold prediction play.
No, I like it, man. I did not have that name on my radar, and now I believe I just grabbed him in Raz Slam a couple weeks back. So
there you go.
I'm in. My next one is a deep one as well, with Oscar Colas winning the AL MVP. Colas, we've talked about for the White Sox. He once was kind of that dual position, kind of the mini Otani with batter pitcher. Now he's fully focused as a batter. It looks like he is winning that role in the outfield for the White Sox. And yeah, there's a lot to be excited about here, not only for the 24-year-old, which is kind of he's no spring hen for never seeing a major league game. But last year in Double A, in 50 games, had 14 home runs, pretty much putting together an OPS that was well into the 900s. Colas, in terms of how he grades out, he's a 60 grade raw power. the hit tool is where they knock him. And he always had kind of a high strikeout rate. His projected strikeout rate is 27% pretty much across the board. But his spring training caught our attention, where he's had 53 at-bats, which leads the White Sox, by the way, hitting .283 in terms of the batting average, and he's striking out just 13% of the time. So I love to see that that projected strikeout rate has been cut in half so far. Obviously, you can't put too much stock in that, but even if he's like a 19-20% strikeout guy, he's got three homers in these 22 games. So, you know, you kind of play the extrapolation game, and it's like, you know, three homers in that time means he's on pace for like a 21-22 homer season type of thing. But the hit tool, he's always ran a high average in the minors, always hitting above 300. So I would not be surprised if Oscar Colas was a big payout on AL Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it looks like he is going to be given at least a chance to run with this role. I mean, everything went wrong for the White Sox last year. I think we talked about this a bunch recently, but it looks like it should be in line for them to have a big season. And, you know, you need a player like Colas to sort of take off if that's the case, and he very well could.
Yeah, right now he's slated to hit eighth in that lineup. They've kind of got him marked as platooning, but that's all going to be production-based, so I think we'll just have to see what happens there.
If he, like, he could, you know, he won't be platooned if he shows that he's, like, one of the better hitters on that lineup, right? Like, think about the outfielders the White Sox ran out last year. I know Eli was hurt for a bunch, but there were some, you know, bad names. So they need, you know, something like that to hit for them there. So I would not be surprised if he took that job and ran with it.
Yeah. Okay, Steve, on to you for our final bold prediction here.
Final bold prediction. Jesse Winker returns the form, hits .280 with 30 bombs. This is like, you know, peak 2021 Jesse Winker. You know, there was so much, like, and rightful hype, I think, leading into him last year. You know, had a full-time playing job despite leaving Cincinnati, and just sort of everything went wrong. He was hurt. He talked about how he didn't really fit into that locker room because it was a bunch of guys that came up together, which, you know, that's more soft analysis, but hey, that's meaningful. So I just think that, you know, a fresh start back into a hitter's environment. Like, the Brewers have done kind of okay with these sort of guys. You know, Renfro had a good year. Yelich, they obviously developed and had an MVP year. I don't expect
Tellez,
yeah. There's some guys, there's some talented hitters that they do really well for reclamation projects, sort of. And I just think that it's like kind of a perfect scenario for Winker. And talk about a lineup that like needs a bat. Like, they're not going to platoon him, even, you know, if he's this good hitter, just because their lineup, you know, constantly needs hitters. Like, we talk about how, you know, they have all this pitching and just not the hitting to go with it. Like, if he's just holds his own against lefties, like, he's going to be in the lineup every day. They just need, you know, warm bodies, essentially. The Brewers do. So I like Winker a lot for next year.
Yeah, right now the outfield for the Brewers is Yelich, Garrett Mitchell, and Brian Anderson, and they've got Winker at DH, which I love to see because he's also been known to have a really hard time staying on the field. So hopefully, yeah, he can maximize some ABs playing the DH role there, and then, you know, still kind of get some outfield appearances just because. But yeah, I like it, Steve. I think when we talked about him recently, and he was an auto pick in one of my drafts, but it was not far off from where basically there's a pit for like an OF 5 or 6. So I think it's a really good shout. I mean, it was just a year ago when we were all hyping up Winker, and 2 years ago he looked like Babe Ruth. So I like Winker. He's still only 29 years old, which is crazy to think about for how long he's been around. So I like that one a lot. Complete opposite end of the spectrum for my final one is that Kyle Tucker finishes first overall in fantasy.
Nice.
It seems like for years we've just been looking at Tucker and kind of waiting for him to put it all together. And I think it's a good sign that even when, you know, managers have, you know, will say like, oh, it's frustrating to own Tucker and you're kind of waiting for him to come around and he still finishes like a top 15 guy. Mm-hmm. I think we're just waiting for that season where it all comes together. And I think it's going to click. The average was 257 last year. The homers and speed at 30-25 was very nice. Had 71 runs, 107 RBIs, but he was hitting sixth or in the bottom third of the order. Now he's slated at the moment with the Altuve injury to hit second. And I think that's finally going to like let him into the top part of that order, and he will not leave, which should be great for those runs and RBIs to be closer to like 200 plus. And then you look at the average, which 257, his BABIP last year was 261, and it's been over 300 the three seasons before that. You know, I think that his true talent strikes me as like a 270, 75 guy. And the homers are there, the speed with the bases, his willingness to run. He got caught stealing four times last year. I think this is a 30-30 guy. He's in the better part of the order, and he's been a guy who suffered drastically from the shift. His WOBA last year, when there was a shift, was 336, and when there was not a shift, was 463. So I think there could be even, you know, I don't know if you could call it a breakout, but I think Tucker could emerge as the top guy in fantasy this year. Number two in the league in the PLV strike zone judgment. I just think he's the total package, and this could be the year that he finally does it. So that's my last one there, Steve, for Tucker. Do you have any shares, Steve?
I don't. I haven't really picked like his range. I love Kyle Tucker, though, and I think it's a great point with the shift. Like, that's the only sort of thing that was holding him back. And like, he's even had, you know, stretches where, you know, remember, I think it was 2021 where he had, you know, I think he was hitting like 220 going to the May, and then finished with like a 290 average.
That's right. So
like
we saw it.
Hit like 330 for, you know, 3/4 of the season. Like, he's done it before. I really like it with Kyle Tucker. I think it's a great call.
Yeah, and Tucker, where is his ADP right now? We'll find that.
I think it's like 7, around there, 7 or 8.
Yeah, yep, ADP's at 7. So I don't know if it's all that bold, but I think people would still be kind of surprised if he was 1-1.
Absolutely, so, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, well, let's catch our breath, Steve. That was a lightning round. We did pretty good.
I think we did good, yeah.
20 picks and a couple breaks in there. And now we can talk about our chalkboard picks. Some of these might have some overlap, but we got to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back. All right, so Steve, the chalkboard. You know, for the viewers, for the listeners, just give them a brief synopsis of kind of why we came to this and kind of how it all works.
Yeah, so we wanted to basically be accountable. We wanted to pick guys that we liked or disliked more or less than the market, and sort of stick with them all year and come back and recap and say, hey, these are the guys that we're putting up on a chalkboard. It's going to be up there all year. We're going to come back and look at it and sort of be accountable. You know, not that, you know, it's like a widespread issue, but, you know, you recommend all these guys and then you kind of forget about them, whether they do good or not. You know, I'm sure you hear about them if they do good. But if not, you know, you kind of look back and, yeah, you own it. And I think we've sort of learned from it and learned how to be better at it. And I think we were a lot better at it last year.
You are, Steve.
Well, at least in the process, though, too, right? Like, yeah. You know, process over results. So I think it was a fun activity. Now, I cannot believe, like we said at the top of the show, it's year 3 of the chalkboard. Crazy, crazy stuff.
Year 3. So basically how this works is we each have 2 targets. We each have 2 fades. And the rule is that they have to finish 20% higher or lower than their ADP mm-hmm. based on the Razzball player rater. So, Steve, with that said, let's kick us off with target number 1 for you this year.
Target number 1 for me. Who do I have here first? That is Matt Olson. So we've talked about it. It's not a surprise how much both of us, I believe, like Matt Olson. And I just think he is getting docked far too much for what he did last season, which wasn't even that bad a year. I know the batting average was low, maybe not as much power as many people hope for, but you know, he's tearing the cover off the ball this spring. We've talked about how it sometimes takes a year to adjust to a new environment. Like, that park is great. The lineup is great. Matt Olson should have a monster 2023. And I think, you know, he will be drafted again like he was heading into 2022, ahead of that, after that trade from Oakland to Atlanta. You know, he hit 39 homers, right, in Oakland, right? He could easily hit 40 in Atlanta. Absolutely. I think he'll be, like, you know, that mid-20s or pick again, sort of up there with the top, you know, this, the back end of the top-tier first baseman in 2024. So I like Olson to ride up draft boards.
I love it, man. I wish my home league draft was sooner than it is, because he's already moving up draft boards.
Yeah, he is.
50 a month ago, then it's 40, then it's, you know, now it's 39. So he'll have to finish 32nd or lower, but I'm with you. I think he really can. And to me, the name of the game will just be that the batting average, where it was 240 last year, but the X average was much higher on Pitcherless, had him at a 267. He's another guy who got shifted on a lot. So, yeah, I love that one. Mine is an easy one. It's Kevin Gausman, whose ADP is at 65. So I would need him to finish in the top 52 for me to make good on this prediction. But I think, for all the reasons I laid out earlier on the bold prediction, that it is going to happen. You know, just, he was very unlucky last year. I think the strikeout rates with the volume of innings pitched is a great combination. And the fact that, you know, as good as he was last year, he was super unlucky. So, you know, once all that stuff kind of gets corrected, I really like Gausman. I don't know that he's still going to be like a 2.25 ERA guy, but I don't think he needs to be. The environment might look different all around, but I think Gausman is good enough to where he will be an SP1. And he should crack the top 50. So I'm planting the flag, and I really hope I get Gausman in more leagues. I have him in one so far, but a couple more drafts, so we'll see.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
All right, Steve, now we got to switch over to the Haterade and look at the fades. So first fade for you. This one's on brand. I'll say that much.
Yeah, yeah, it's been known. Bobby Witt, I just – do not like the cost this year. It is just way, way too high for a guy that has a sub 800 OPS. And I don't know if it's going to be much higher than that. I could be proven wrong. Like, he could easily have a 30-40 season and be like a top five pick next year. That is well within the range of accountability. Maybe this should have been a bold prediction. But, hey, he only needs to finish lower than the 13th player to justify that. Just shows how high Bobby Witt is going. So, fade one, Bobby Witt. I just think that the price is being, you know, just so high because of the 20 homers and 30 steals as a rookie. I think he's going to repeat last year, which is still really good, but it's not the 11th overall pick.
Okay. Yeah. So that's still, because what, he was 20-30 and hit like 250? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Around there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was going to ask, I think you're totally right. He could be a top five guy next year. On the other hand, there's not that much. Like, he only needs to slide back a little bit for this to be a check for you. So my question is, if you were to throw, like, a number on where you think Witt would finish in terms of, like, 5x5 ranks, like, where do you think he will finish?
30.
Okay. So, yeah, even farther back.
Yeah. I think where did he finish? Right. Where did he finish last year? Do we know where he finished last year?
We'd have to look that up. But yeah, I would imagine it's somewhere around there, because the average, you know, it's mainly the steals that you were getting. Mm-hmm. So can look that up. Not going to do it right now. But yeah. So my first fade is actually Ozzie Albies. And right now his ADP is at 51. So this would have to have him moving to 61. But I think Albies, you know, it's just been there are a couple things working against him. Obviously, he had a couple injuries last season that just kind of nagged, and it was one of those situations where it was like, you got to throw out last season altogether, because he hit 247. He only had 8 home runs. Yes, it was in 64 games. But now, in the meantime, Michael Harris II has erupted. They brought in Austin Riley. All of a sudden, Albies finds himself at 6th in the batting order. He's not cemented in kind of that top 3. So I'm just kind of looking at Albies, and honestly, the hit tool, you know, it's the year before last, it was 259. So I'm just wondering if his true talent is like a 260 hitter. And I know he had, like, you know, some homer surges here and there, but with a full year off last year, I'm wondering if there's some second base tax on this ADP. I could just see Albies basically being like a 2020 guy that hits like a 265 average, and I don't think that's enough to justify like a top 50 pick. So that's my thought on Albies. I think some of it's circumstance. I don't hate Albies. I have him in a dynasty league, and I'm not in a hurry to sell him, but because he's just 26. That said, I think you're really paying for prime Albies when, to me, there's a little bit of a question mark that he has to get out there and kind of show that he's back. So that's my first fade. What are your thoughts on Albies?
I think Albies was my first fade last year, right?
Oh, yeah, because so, he was going like pick 30 or something.
Or was it 2 years ago and I was wrong on him? I kind of forget. But
I forgot about that too. I thought it was last year, though.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but... either way, I think that, you know, the logic is correct, and it's kind of another guy that gets bumped up for his speed, doesn't have the greatest, you know, contact skills and plate discipline, has that platoon splits. There's always been that threat of, like, you know, Albies should only hit from one side. So, I understand it and I'm with you there. I think that, you know, maybe the second base inflation too is tough there on him, and I think that's only going to shoot up. I think that you're probably going to get, you know, if we did the show in a week, his ADP would be higher just because of the news to Altuve. Yeah. So, I think that the logic is sound there.
Yeah, I guess it's worth pointing out that he might run more if he's hitting sixth in the order, and he did. He only stole 3 bases last season in the 64 games, but he got caught stealing 5 times. So maybe there's a propensity to run. But
he's not like an elite sprint speed guy, too, either. I don't think so. I think it's good, but not like absolutely elite, like burner speed, too.
Yeah. Last, I mean, a couple of years ago, 80th percentile. Last year, 54th percentile. So, yeah, it's just a lot of, you know, good at a lot of things. And to me, I don't know that all adds up to like a top 50 player. So that's my fade. But let's jump back to target number 2 for you, Steve.
Target number 2 for me, also on my bowl predictions. That's Hunter Green. He is currently ADP 113, so you need to rise to 90. If he wins the NL Cy Young, he's going to be a lot better than 90, right? I think that, you know, he is the quintessential pitcher around pick 100 that just – has everything, is just kind of there because that's where he's being drafted and doesn't have the biggest track record. I think Hunter Green is going to shoot up draft boards for all the reasons why I wrote about, talked about. Love him.
Yeah, it's funny. I was listening to our show last year, Steve, just to kind of remember how we structured. And you got to Dylan Cease, and I think it was like he had to go from 88 to 72 or something. And we had the conversation that he's not going to finish 72. He's either going to be top 30, or he's going to, you know, blow up. And this is
what Green is. Yes.
And this is Green. I mean, you look at it and it's just like, he's either as rocky as he was for the first 4 months of the season, or he's as elite as he was for the last month of the season. Maybe there's a little bit of a middle ground, but I think even if it is a mix, then it's probably going to be a mix like Dylan Cease was a couple years ago, where he would eclipse this. So I think, you know, he's got that Robbie Ray, whatever it is, where it's just like, even if he has take some lumps, he's going to be so good when he's on that. I agree.
Like the elite cherry bomb. Yeah. Like
yes, exactly. Cease. Which does make me seem, or make me feel like his best format is probably Roto or best ball. In a weekly league, I could see him being a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, that's true. You know, true. He just breaks. Could ruin a matchup. Yeah.
Overall, love the pick, and I am in. It is wild, man, that his ADP in our earliest drafts was like 111, and it has just kind of stayed there the whole offseason. People have like loved him, but he's kind of just stayed in that range, which is kind of crazy. My second target is Nico Horner, who we already talked about. I just love the circumstance. I think the runs, which are always the most overlooked stat in 5x5, I think the runs are going to surge this year. I think he's got a true hit tool that's up there, like a 285 on a true talent level, and could steal 25, 30 bags. He's not a zero in homers, and I think he's going to rack up a ton of runs. So Nico Horner, whose ADP is 139, would have to jump all the way up to 111, but I'm willing to place a bet there that I think Horner is just going to fill up the stat sheet this year with the Cubs. So that's my second target. And Steve, we've already hit on him, but we'll go ahead and move to fade two for you, a guy who we haven't talked about as much, but it's, I think you mentioned a few shows back that you are not buying in here.
Yeah, Jake McCarthy, he is, my Miles Straw of this year. He might not be as bad of a hitter, but he seems like he, is being drafted solely for that speed where, I don't think this is going to be needed with how much I think stolen bases are going to go up, right? Like, I don't think there's going to be this tax on, the steal-only guys. Like, they're going to be more prevalent. At least that's my theory. With McCarthy, a lot more goes into it. His batted ball skills are just not great. He doesn't hit the ball that hard. And the Arizona outfield is crowded and could get crowded really quickly. Like, he could play himself out of playing time. I know they got rid of Varsho and traded him to the Blue Jays, but they have Alec Thomas. They have, Corbin Carroll. Like, those guys aren't going to sit. Like, I think they're going to want to see what they have in Alec Thomas. He was a top prospect heading into last year. So, if he does not perform, they're not just going to let him go out there. They're going to want to see what they have, especially as they try to get into a rebuild and see what other prospects they have there. I know they had Gavin Stone last year, who was pretty good, but they traded him. So they're going to want to churn and burn these guys to find someone that they want. And if Jake McCarthy's bat isn't doing it, they should easily be able to replace him, which I think could happen, kind of what happened to Straw in Cleveland last year.
Yeah, it's, you look at what he did in 2021 in the majors, 24 games, super small sample size, but he only hit 220. And then last year he hit 283, but that was with the 349 BABIP. His XBA was actually 249. The fact that he is slated to hit third makes me feel like they'll give him a little bit of run to see what they got here in a 25-year-old. But all that to be said, yeah, I don't know that anyone going that high, it feels like it's a steals tax, and the average and the pop and everything around it could be just kind of, mediocre, which would take him out of that range. So you have to get him from 111 overall to outside of I'm sorry, 114 to 137 for this to be true. And I think it's a good one. I don't have any shares. I'm just, seeing what the Diamondbacks are going to do this year. They have him batting third. Who's around him? I mean, you got Corbin Carroll, Christian Walker. We haven't talked about as much.
I think we should like him more than the fact that we haven't mentioned him all off season, where he was kind of like our
boy last year. We liked him going into it. Yeah.
I
don't know. He's kind of sneaky.
We've been focusing on getting first baseman early. That's kind of been a big theme of ours. So
for sure. No, but I think it's a good fade pick. It makes sense for sure. And then mine to round out, it's another positional one, but it's Adley Rutschman. Adley's ADP right now is 63, so this would have to have him moving back to 76. It's the hard hit rates weren't great. I know that he's flashed some promise with the pop in the minors, but a 254 average, last year, 113 games, only 13 homers. Just wondering if people are so excited about the real life player mm-hmm. here in Adley that we're getting away from the fact that you put in a full season here and what are we talking about? Is it 22 homers? He bats 260. To me, that's kind of a good outcome, and he should have good runs and RBIs hitting in the heart of that order, but he's still a catcher. He's probably going to get rested, on the fifth or sixth game. So I don't know. I just don't see the investment here. It's easier for me to look at a Will Smith in the past. Even I was in on Grandal last year. Mm-hmm. I just don't think Adley has that like 25 plus homer power, and maybe I'm wrong on that, but yeah, the hit, you know, he's not like a Alejandro Kirk where he's going to bat 290, 300. So all in a package. And then you tell me it's like a fifth round pick at ADP 63 and I'm out. So that's my second fade. I have no shares. I don't know, Steve, you actually might. Have you grabbed him in one of your leagues?
I don't know if I did. I did last year quite a bit as like a catcher one sort of upside play, and it was, you know, all right, but definitely a much better real life player than fantasy player. And I think an underrated thing too is Camden's not the best place to hit.
Yeah, good point.
I know he's a switch hitter, but not gonna, you know, get any cheap home runs over to right field or to left field there. So yeah, I see it. I think he'll be fine. Probably finish around that value, you know, which probably be a top five catcher where he's being drafted, but might not be like the league winner, amazing catcher that you're kind of hoping for. So I see it.
Yeah, it's a good point. He's not going to end up at like a 130 rank or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't know
any Orioles single stat. Orioles did good, really well last year. Are they going to do as well next year? You know, the progress isn't always linear. I don't know if they massively improved, right? So it could be a tough year there. I could see that sort of being a little bit of a reality check down there in Baltimore.
Yep. Okay, man, that was a handful of names to get through, Steve, but we did it. We did it, man. And, you know, next show is opening day, which is huge. Do you have anything planned? You're going to have the triple monitors out?
Oh, yeah, the triple monitors out. You know, this is probably going to be my last opening day in this apartment, but, you know, I'll have to set up a triple monitor in, like, a basement or office, wherever I get it when we do get a bigger place. Can't be in this one-bedroom apartment with a 10-month-old now.
So, I'll never forget Lauren dropping that in the wedding vows.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, when Steve has his three monitors going watching baseball, shout out to Wins Above Fantasy and all your buddies turning point.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Legendary.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Shout out to Lauren there, too, for letting me do that. But, yeah, I cannot believe it, right? It's finally here. We're a week away. Our last show where there won't be baseball on for another 6 months, right? It's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of answers, at least, you know, small sample size answers, but position battles, you know, hot starts, all that stuff, which if you guys are wondering what we got next week, we are going to do kind of a primer for opening weekend, looking at players that basically we've got a close eye on to where if they kind of go off in that first weekend, we might be quick to pounce on the waiver wire. So be sure to tune in next Thursday and every Thursday throughout the regular season. Baseball is back, folks. So we could not be more excited to talk with you every week and more grateful for you guys tuning in. But that is episode 92 for Wins Above Fantasy. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys.